and be here every chance you get. I know we have some from out of state that I met this morning, but I think we have others also from the neighborhood here and the surrounding area, and we want you to come and consider West Park as you're looking for a church home. Those that were in Bible class this morning knew I was flying blind, so Jim Welburn has loaned me a watch. He was concerned that I not know what time it might be, so I do have a watch, and he was fooling with it before he gave it to me. Is there an alarm going to go off or something on this? He was setting something, so we may have a surprise here in a minute. I don't know. It's about that time of year again, when the biggest thing on many people's mind is going back to school. Some have already gone. Some of our college, university students have already made the trek, already made the trip, and they've moved back to campus, and they're already there this morning. Others are going to be going in just the next few days. On a local level, the new school year is definitely upon us. And right here in the West Park family, we have several students who will be beginning school, going back to school. We have several teachers, staff, that will begin a new chapter as well. And all of us, as we have the unique experience in our tabernacle days here, as we're waiting for our new church building somewhere, somehow, some way, we hope soon. But presently, as we have for the last good while now, we are housed here in this elementary school building. So the new school year affects everybody. It really does. It means different things to different groups. For the students, it means going into the next grade, or I'm going to the next level if you're in the university circuit. It means new teachers that you need to either impress or maybe depress. I don't know. But there's going to be new relationships there. For teachers, you're going to have new students. New students to prepare them, to scare them, whatever tactic you want to use. For parents, schedule changes. How am I going to get them to school? How am I going to get them picked up from school? What about all of the school supplies that needs to be bought? School clothes that need to be purchased? How am I going to pay for all this? And then for the rest of us, it means, as was announced by Andrew a while ago, we're going to get kicked out of here for the next three Thursday nights, as has happened in previous years. It means stacking the chairs again. It means breaking down the sound system, the AV monitors. It means all of the teaching supplies, communion supplies. Everything we leave on the table means we're going to have to start carrying it out and bringing it back once again each and every week. But these are changes that affect all of us in different ways. But a new school year really and truly means a whole lot more. I want to suggest this morning that a new school year really means a new opportunity. A new opportunity. The old slate is wiped clean, and you have another chance, another opportunity to do what you didn't do before, maybe to finish what you didn't finish before, maybe to improve on that which needs improvement. And paths and ideas and opportunities are going to come your way and our way, opportunities that have never come before. But this morning, as we're thinking critically about a new school year and everything it entails, may I suggest to us that the new opportunities aren't just physical. The new opportunities are spiritual as well, if we seize the moment. John chapter 4. Jesus talks to his disciples about fields of harvest. He said, look around you at all the fields of harvest. But to set the context for that statement that he makes to them, we got to back up a little bit and realize that Jesus has been very busy, engaged in a conversation with a Samaritan woman at Jacob's well. They're at this famous well, and in that conversation, they discussed her life. Jesus asked her for some water to drink. He said, can you get me some water? And she had the reaction. She said, you, a Jewish man, you're asking me, a Samaritan woman, for water. She said, you're not from around here, are you? You don't understand. This isn't the way it works. Your people, the Jews, my people, the Samaritans, they don't even like each other. There's no intermingling. There's no conversation even. And also, you are a man. I am a woman in our culture. At this time, we're not supposed to be talking out here by ourselves. And here you are asking me to get you a drink of water. Jesus said, woman, if you knew who I was, you'd be asking me for something to drink. I'd give you the water of life, where when you drank it, you'd never get thirsty again. She said, well, give me that water. I want that water. I want to drink it so I don't get thirsty, so I don't have to keep coming out here every day and drawing water. Jesus said, fine. Go get your husband and come on back and I'll give it to you. She said, well, I don't have a husband. Jesus said, that's right. Said, you've had five of them. But the man that you're living with right now, you're not even married to him. He's not really your husband. Y'all are just living together. In these few sentences that are recorded for us, Jesus had an in-depth conversation with this woman about her life. But then the conversation changes. And they have a conversation about worship. She said, our forefathers say to worship God, we're supposed to do it right here on this mountain. Said, the Jews, your people, they say we're supposed to go to Jerusalem. That's the proper place to worship. She said, which one's right? Jesus said, a time's coming when neither one of them is going to be right, because the locations is not what's going to be important, but rather the heart. And he said, true worshipers are going to worship God in spirit and in truth, and these are the types of worshipers that God is going to seek, that God will be looking for. Well, their conversation starts drawing down to conclusion. They've talked about her life. They've talked about worship. The woman looked at him and said, I know what you're saying is correct. I know about this future worshiping and the time's coming. And she said, I know that a Messiah is coming and he will explain all the details. Well, she's partially right and she's partially wrong. She's right that a Messiah is coming, but she's wrong and that he is coming because he's already come. He's right there before. He's standing right there in her very eyesight, right there with her, and has been talking to her all the time. And Jesus looked at her and said, I am him. Well, at that moment, if you're reading through the account there in John chapter 4, the disciples show back up. They've gone into town. They've gone into town to get some food, get some groceries, get something to eat. And they come back and they are surprised that Jesus is talking with a Samaritan woman, but they do not bring it up to him. They're all thinking it, but nobody brings it up. Instead, they told Jesus, they said, Jesus, you need to get something to eat. It's been a long day. It's going to be a longer day. And we brought you some food. We brought you back something for nourishment. Jesus turned down their offer. He said, I have food to eat that you know nothing about. Well, the disciples were confused and they asked each other, didn't ask him now. They asked each other, they said, did somebody come by and bring him some food while we were gone? Well, then Jesus brings clarity to their confusion. And he said, my food is to do the will of the one who sent me. Then he told them, he said, you're waiting for the harvest, which will happen in about 4 months. He's talking to them here about agriculture. He's talking to them about the crops that are in the field. And they have been planted, but they're about 4 months away from the harvest season. But he shifts the conversation with them, which Jesus does many times in his teachings, in his parables, and he shifts it from the fields of grain and the harvest out there, and he says, open your eyes. Look at the fields spiritually. He said, they are ripe for harvest right now, right here. Well, while he's talking to them, the woman shows back up at the well. And she's gone into town, and she comes back, but with her, the entire town shows up. All the people come. And when they get there, they listen to Jesus, and then they make this statement. They said, we no longer believe just because of what she said, but now we have heard it for ourselves, and we know that this man really is, Jesus really is, the Savior of the world. Well, this morning, I want to make a connect here. And I want to suggest to you that Jesus' message here in John chapter 4 about the fields of harvest provides a message for us today about schools of harvest. Schools of harvest. Jesus explains to his disciples, he said, their food, our food, ought to be to do the will of God. Our food as a congregation, as Christians, our food is the charge from heaven to go and make disciples, influence people, teach people, baptize people, teach them some more, train them some more. And most of the time, we're waiting as the disciples were waiting for 4 more months. You ever notice that? There's always something we're waiting for. We're waiting for a new church building. We're waiting to be able to go on a mission trip to a mission spot. We're waiting for a big day of outreach. We're waiting for something. Most of the time, we know not what we're waiting for. We just know we're waiting. Am I right on that? But Jesus said, look around you. Open up your eyes. The fields are ripe for harvest. We just need to open our eyes so we can see it. There's many ways, I think, we might can reap the harvest. Talking about schools. Talking about schools. So that's the time of year we're facing right here. I recently read an article by a preacher over in Tennessee. And in this article, he suggested a few ways that parents could be involved and impact our schools. His article was on the premise of we always are worrying, as we should, that God and Jesus are going to be taken out of the schools, separated out of the schools, no presence of them within the walls of school. He said, parents, here's 4 things you might consider. Real quickly, I can give them to you. Number one, he suggested to the parents you might send a note to school with your child. Send a note to the teacher. And he said, in the note, introduce yourself. Tell them who you are. Might give just a sentence of something about you. He said, in the note, go ahead and volunteer your support and your time. If there are things that need doing, volunteer. And then he said, go as far in the note as telling the teacher, I'm going to be praying for you. I'm going to pray for you for this school year by name. He said, number two, after you sent that note, he said, report good news to the teacher. Most teachers are only contacted when there's a problem. Most teachers are only contacted when somebody's got something to complain about. He said, imagine the impact you might have if you send a note just thanking the teacher for the hard work she's doing and let her know, I can see the progress in my child. He said, just a short note of thanking her. Then number three, he said, after you've done that, go the second mile. He said, don't just send her a card on National Teacher Day or National Teacher Week. He said, send her a card every week and do nice things, special things for the teacher all year long. And he said, at this point, this is the third step, kind of let her know or him know that the reason you're doing this, the reason you're showing this concern and this kindness is because of Jesus and the love that he has shown to us. And then he said, number four, after you've done one, two, and three, after you have built a relationship of sorts, go ahead and invite that teacher to church. He said, they may not come, but that's okay. Invite them to church. Once you've had the opportunity to show them why you're doing the things you're doing, invite them to come and meet your spiritual family. Just some suggestions to parents. Students, you're going to have a lot of chances, a lot of opportunities to make good decisions for God. They're going to come by. They're going to come down the pike. They'll come down the road. While your fellow peers are watching and while your teachers are watching too, make the right decision. Make the proper decision. Let your light so shine that they see Jesus, God in you. Dare to be different, as the little poster says, if you've ever seen that poster. Dare to be different. Be different. We talked about this morning, the adults who were in here. Be holy for God's sake, for Jesus' sake. Teachers, staff, you're going to have opportunities also to impact the students, to impact them spiritually. When those opportunities come by, don't miss the opportunity. Don't let it get away. Make an impression for God upon those that are watching and listening. And then for West Park, as a church family, we need to grow. We need to do our part to see that the kingdom is strengthened here, now, in this location. Why don't we open up our eyes and see the fields around us right here? Let's don't wait 4 months for the grain to ripen. Let's don't wait for a church building. Let's don't wait for anything else. Let's be about it right now. I don't know how we do it. I'll be honest with you this morning. If you think I've got the answer, I don't. But maybe we need a task force. Maybe we need a group of folks to spend some time in serious thought on this to tell us how we, while we are temporary residents of an entire elementary school here, while we are prayerfully, hopefully passing through on our way to our own building, but what a shame. What a tragedy. What a waste if while we are here, we don't impact this place at this time while we're here. Jesus said, open your eyes. Look at the fields. They're ripe unto harvest. God gives us opportunities, and He knows, and He's watching. Jesus tells His disciples in John chapter 4, verse 36, He said, even now the reaper draws his wages. Even now he harvests the crop for eternal life. We can't put it off. Now is the harvest time. Then He says in verse 38, He said, I sent you to reap what you've not worked for. Others have done the hard work, and you have reaped the benefits of their labor. You see, God's already been working in the hearts of those around us before we got onto the scene. But God, by His grace, allows us to participate in the mission if we'll pick up the torch and we'll continue the story. Galatians chapter 6, verse 7. Paul writes and says, do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. And as I thought about that verse, and I meant to bring one, I forgot it. But it's kind of like a tennis ball or a rubber ball. If I had one here this morning in my hand and I was coordinated enough to do it, what happens if I throw that ball down on this gymnasium floor? It bounces back up. What if I toss it up in the air? It'll fall back down. For every action that I give it, there is an opposite and equal reaction. You say, what are you saying? It's what Jesus said. For every action you have, there's an opposite and equal reaction. If you sow, you will reap. You reap what you sow. And if you don't sow, you're not going to reap. It's not going to happen. And God knows if we are sowing, and God will make sure that we are reaping. Paul reminds us two verses later in Galatians 6, verse 9. He says, if we don't grow weary, heard it read well ago, if we don't grow weary in doing good, at the proper time we'll receive a harvest. May not be immediately. May not be like the tennis ball that pops right back up or because of gravity immediately falls in your hand. But if you sow, you're going to reap. Jesus tells us we will. Paul tells us we will. My concern this morning is many times we just don't sow. Why? Is it because we're bad people? No. It's because we're doing what the disciples did. We're saying in 4 months, big things are going to happen. Once we get to this spot, wonderful things will take place. I have seen so many times, I have been guilty so many times of trying to make plans of how we can get ourselves to a mission point so we can sow the seed when all the time we're just walking by people that would listen if we'd just talk to them. They live on either side of me. They're at the grocery store when I'm checking out. They're cutting my hair when I go in to get a haircut. But I'm always waiting for that moment out here when I have that opportunity and I'm going to sow the seed. Jesus said, open your eyes. Look around you. Look at the fields. They are ripe to harvest. And in that setting, in John chapter 4, the Samaritan woman, if you'll notice, when she went back to town, she sowed the seed and she came back with the entire town. The disciples went to town and they came back with groceries. Because, you see, that's what they went for. They went for food. And that's what they came back with. She went to sow the seed. And she came back with the whole city. Students, parents, teachers, staff, church, family, may we open our eyes and see that the fields are ripe for harvest now where we are. And may God use us as instruments for His glory. This morning, if we can help you in any way, in a public fashion, we invite you to respond right now as we stand and as we sing.